Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, this is Mark from Talking Metal.
And this is Victor from Mars Attacks.
And we are together kind of doing a very special dual episode, if you will. It's a Talking Metal slash Mars Attacks combo episode. And this is going to be going out on the stream of, or not the stream, the RSS, I guess, of Talking Metal and Mars Attacks. So, Victor, what time is it over there in Spain today?
It is, we're 6 hours ahead of the East Coast, so it is roughly 25 to 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and we got 9:37 over here in New York City where I'm recording. So it's good to talk with you, Victor, and I appreciate you doing this with me. I was recently listening to two great episodes that you put out on your podcast, the Mars Attacks podcast, that dealt with Kiss and specifically with Revenge. And really, as an obsessive Kiss fan, I really, really enjoyed listening to those two episodes. And, you know, it was just a great listen because it was one of those things where I agreed with a lot of what you and Mitch were saying. But then also there were certain points that you guys were saying where I was disagreeing with you and really got emotionally and involved in listening to those two episodes. Can you tell us a little bit about those episodes and about who Mitch is and how you pulled him in to do the episodes with you?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I do want to say thanks for the great criticism. And, I have no problem with people disagreeing with what we said. That's sort of part of the fun of doing these podcasts is that you get, people's blood boiling to an extent and get them to either agree or disagree. So that's cool. And I found out about Mitch, I guess, about a year ago when tracking people down to add comments to the Mars Attacks Classic Albums column, I came across Mitch in another podcast, and I thought he was very insightful and thought it was really cool that he wasn't scared to voice his opinion with different topics. So I said, I should try getting a hold of him to see if he could, lend the same type of comments to what I was trying to do.
Right.
And little did I know that he was an absolute Kiss freak as well. So little by little, I'd been going back and forth with him via email and via Facebook. And he put out this series of five interviews regarding Revenge. And he has a really good relationship with Bruce Kulick and with Eric Singer. So he was able to pry some information out of them that maybe others wouldn't have been able to do, that I know I wouldn't have been able to do, because there's one specific tidbit with Bruce Kulick that Bruce mentioned something to me and then copped to Dick Wagner playing a solo on Revenge, which was completely different to what he had told me. So it was just interesting that due to his experience and due to his know-how, he was able to get like extra juice out of some of these people. And, when things are written up, it's never the same as you know, a podcast or a radio show where you're actually able to hear the inflection in someone's voice and hear them explain things. So it's completely different. And you're listening to me and Mitch go back and forth, and you're hearing, you know, him, you know, either be, you know, sarcastic, or hearing him be, you know, enthusiastic about different topics. And he purposely, he was actually the reason why we did a part two, because he said, you know what? All right, now you've heard me describe these episodes, or these interviews, I'm sorry. Now you go and read them and take notes and let me know what you think about the comments. So that's why we sort of did the other half of the episode with me coming back and mentioning, you know, what stood out to me, what really surprised me. And, you know, I've mentioned this to you before over the phone. No matter how big a fan you think you are of Kiss, in this case, there's always someone that knows a little more, knows some extra, you know, details that, you know, as you're saying, really get you going and really get you hooked. And, you know, you're waiting to see what else.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff you
out.
Guys kind of revealed on that episode, I was just blown away by, like, for example, Vinnie Vincent, his guitar, it seems like there's a good possibility his guitar track or some of his guitar track was left on the song Unholy. And I thought that was pretty amazing.
Right. Yeah. During that intro, that scratchy part. And it's interesting because with the box set that they released later on, and this is something that I forgot to mention during those episodes, when they released the song on their box set, that whole intro is missing. They fade into just the opening chords of the song.
Wow, that's interesting.
So that makes you think, you know, that's got to be Vinny, and that's another way of them sort of sticking it to him.
Oh, right. Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, what about that song Car Jam that's on that record? And just a little bit of background for you guys who are listening. We're talking about the Revenge record, which was an album by Kiss that came out in the early 90s, right? 91, I think? 92?
Yeah, it's 92 because it was just the 20th anniversary. And yeah, Car Jam, for obviously for those big time Kiss fans, they know that that ended up being Breakout on Ace Frehley's first non-Kiss album. And apparently, I'd been looking into the song after we had discussed this, and if I'm not mistaken, in the box set, it actually mentions that the additional rhythm tracks on there were laid on there by Eric Carr, that it was Eric Carr's demo, and that
so
they
there's
just...
no chance that because I remember when Revenge came out, there was like, you know, this is way pre-internet and stuff, but among my little circle of Kiss friends, including John Astronomy, we all were conspiracy theorizing, if you will, that hey, maybe Ace's guitar, you know, being that this Car Jam track was an older track from possibly the Elder Sessions,
right,
that Eric had come up with, you know, which is almost, it was kind of a Moby Dick-esque song with you know, this drum solo in the middle, but maybe that guitar part was actually Ace playing, you know, and is it possible, I mean, wouldn't that be a mind fuck that here's Revenge, an album with Bruce Kulick, Eric Singer, Paul and Gene, but here you had a little Vinny here, and maybe there's some Ace guitar parts left over. No
right.
Possibility of that, you think?
I don't know. You know, with Gene and Paul being the way that they are with money and with everything else, who knows? But then again, there's that great Wendy O. Williams album where Ace and Vinny and Eric Carr and Paul Stanley and Gene appear on that album as well, and they're not all credited. They're credited, right, like now that's online.
That's the Wow album?
Yeah, the Wow album. There are two songs that Vinny wrote on that he actually solos. I don't remember if the first track he solos on, but the second one, it's definitely him because you could tell his style of soloing.
But when that album came out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I can specifically, I didn't buy it right when I came out, because back in the day we didn't, you know, we had to save our paper route money and we could only be very selective on what we wanted to buy. But I remember drooling over that album in a Rose Records record store in Chicago, outside of Chicago, Illinois. as a youngster, and I could have sworn there was a sticker on it that said featuring Ace Frehley on guitar on certain tracks or something. Is that a possibility, or is that?
Yeah, you could be right. I could be messing up my facts. I believe that Gene at least isn't credited. Like, he produced the album, but I believe his bass parts are credited to Baron Von something or other.
Oh yeah,
to sort of throw people off. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyways, so much good Kiss stuff on the Mars Attacks episodes. What is it, 66 and 67?
Yep, 66 and 67. And I do have to say that I did just recently record another episode with Mitch, which will be out shortly, which will be regarding songs that Kiss covered. A lot of people talk about bands covering Kiss, but Kiss has actually gone out and covered a lot of bands throughout their history. Right. So we touched on that, and there's some pretty cool. Interesting.
Hopefully you'll avoid the Peter Criss 1978 solo album, which has a bunch of covers on it.
We mentioned that in passing, yeah. But just to sort of be historically correct. But yeah, I don't know too many people that are fans of that album. So
yeah, that's really the only Kiss record I don't like. I wanted to play a song off of Psycho Circus because I feel this is an album that gets a bad rap, maybe even gotten a slight bad rap on the Revenge episodes you did, Mars Attacks podcast episode 66, 67. And I know Paul Stanley was, I believe, not happy with how this album turned out, or at least he wasn't happy with the recording process of the record. And I actually think there's at least three excellent songs on the record.
Yeah.
That being Psycho Circus, of course, Into the Void, and another song called Within, which I think is just excellent. And this song Within almost to me, you know, sounds like, first of all, the guitar sounds like that Mesa Boogie Rectifier sound, which is just over the top heaviness, very 90s heaviness sound to it.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's what it actually is, a Mesa Boogie, but it could have been. but it almost feels like it could have been a song on, if not Revenge, maybe Carnival of Souls. And what's your thoughts on the song Within, a Gene song? At least Gene sings it. I'm not sure who writes it, actually.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite tracks off of that album as well. The intro to that is just so cool with the guitars coming in, the obvious down-tuning, which isn't as noticeable on other tracks. And I agree with you, it is one of the strongest tracks off of the album. Personally, for myself, I don't think Psycho Circus is a bad album. I think it's sort of like The Wizard of Oz, where all of a sudden somebody pulled the curtain back and you realize that it wasn't Ace and Peter on all the songs, and it was like, all right, well, this wasn't what we all signed up for.
Right,
I think that's what bugs people more than anything else. But again, there are some cool tracks off of that, and is it their worst album? No, I don't even think it's, to be honest with you, there are a lot of other albums that I'd listen to this before some of these other Kiss albums that I don't really care for, including that Peter solo album.
Right, yeah. Anyways, which is not, I it's a shame it even has the Kiss logo on it, because it really, you know, brings down such a good track record, that Peter Criss solo record for Kiss. I don't know what Peter was thinking. You know, it was interesting. I found some cassette that I have of him that he put out in the early 90s.
Right.
Do you remember that? It, like, had a picture of him on the cover with half makeup, half face.
Right. The Chris Catt one. That actually has Ace on it as well.
Does it? Yeah. I got to transfer that cassette to MP3s and play some of it on the podcast at some point, because I couldn't find a copy of it online.
Right.
So, anyways, this is Within off of Psycho Circus by Kiss. Yeah.
was Kiss within coming off of Psycho Circus?
Yes, and you got Victor from Mars Attacks and Mark from Talking Metal doing a dual episode here. I just wanted to, Victor, if you don't mind, quickly throw out a couple shout-outs to some Talking Metal people. Linda from New York City recently made a PayPal donation to Talking Metal, and it was our biggest donation yet. I believe beating out John from the UK. So Linda from New York City, thank you very much for your generous donation to the Talking Metal Fund. I also wanted to give a shout out to Rocky Stradlin. Do you know this guy, Victor?
I actually don't.
Yeah, he's got a real cool, he's a Talking Metal listener, I guess he is, at least he claims to be. And he's got a real cool Facebook page, which I suggest you go like. It's called facebook.com/glammetalhardrock. And he sticks up a lot of cool videos from back in the day that I personally love. So definitely check Rocky Stradlin's Facebook page out. We'll link that through today's show notes on Talking Metal. So, Victor, we spent a little time talking about Kiss. Let's spend some time talking about Led Zeppelin, a band that we know is not 100% heavy metal, but most people cite three bands as kind of the founders or godfathers of heavy metal, and those bands, of course, are Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, and Led Zeppelin, a band.
Sure.
Led Zeppelin, a band that, of course, played everything from country to 1970s era heavy metal, which is very different from what some people consider heavy metal today.
Sure.
But in my opinion, songs like, you know, Whole Lotta Love and some of the early Zeppelin stuff. You know, even off of Led Zeppelin 4, like, you know, Four Sticks and Black Dog. I mean, these were all pillars that the heavy metal sound kind of built upon. And,
right.
And they helped establish, along with Black Sabbath and Deep Purple for that matter, what came to be known, at least by the mid-70s, if not even by, like, say, 1973, it came to, you know, by 1973, people were really starting to throw around this term heavy metal. And, I mean, at that point, if we could take a trip back to 1975, or 1973, for that matter, or 75, it doesn't matter, and you ask somebody what heavy metal is, they would probably, a lot of them, say, I've never heard of it. But the you know, shopping mall rats and kids who combed the record stores and, you know, were starting to wear, like, jean jackets and stuff like that would probably tell you that heavy metal is bands like Deep Purple, you know, Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. I mean, in 1973, you know, I've even heard bands like Humble Pie, you know, back in old articles referred to as heavy metal. Jimi Hendrix, you know, and all of them definitely contributed to what heavy metal has become. But let's talk specifically about Led Zeppelin. This is a band that I started getting into when I was in sixth grade, maybe fifth grade, and it was right around the time that John Bonham died that my attention was kind of brought to Led Zeppelin as a kid, you know, for that matter.
Right.
And Led Zeppelin was a band that in the 1980s, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, they were just as popular, if not even more popular, than they were in the 70s, selling just millions and millions of records throughout the 1980s.
Sure.
And I remember specifically waiting for this reunion. You know, there was in the mid-80s, it was rumored that they were getting back together with Tony Thompson on drums, or possibly Phil Collins on drums, or possibly Cozy Powell on drums, which were all logical, you know, possibilities. And it just never happened. And then we got, I think, in the late 80s, that Atlantic Records anniversary, which featured Jason Bonham on drums. And more recently, we had a reunion. Am I missing any Led Zeppelin reunions?
Yeah, there's the Live Aid one where they did play with Tony Thompson and
Phil
Collins.
Right, the Live Aid one, yeah. And then there was the Atlantic Records anniversary. And then it was a long time, right? I don't think, I mean, of course, Page and Plant got back together and did the Page Plant thing in the 90s. But I don't believe there was an official Led Zeppelin reunion.
Yeah, there
until
was
until the 2007 thing, right?
Right, yeah. They mentioned that it was 18 years or something like that between the 40th anniversary show and the show at the O2 back in 07.
Right. And I know you recently saw the new DVD. You got a sneak preview of it. The DVD of the 2007 concert that is about to be released, which features Jason Bonham replacing his father again, John Bonham. But let's first just talk about, before we get your review of the new DVD, let's talk about why do you think there has never been a reunion? I mean, I think in 2007, our hopes were really pretty high, at least mine were, that, hey, this is finally going to happen. Something I've really been wanting my whole life is finally going to happen. They're going to get back together. And, you know, sure, it might not be Led Zeppelin without John Bonham, but we have the next best thing, Jason Bonham, right, who is making a living basically out of, you know, covering his father's music, or at least that's right, part of his living at this point. So who better than Jason Bonham to replace his father? But, you know, from what I understand, the concert was very good. Dave Grohl and other people commented that it sounded great. I'm curious to hear how you think it sounded on the DVD, which we know could have been touched up or whatever, but still, it's the basic show, I'm sure. But, right, but I mean, why, like, $200 million, $300 million, even $100 million? I'm hearing these figures thrown around. Why wouldn't Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, and John Paul Jones done a reunion tour here in the States or throughout the world as Led Zeppelin in 2007, 2008, after the reunion show in London?
Well, I think there are a few things here. And I think the biggest thing, and this is going back to Kiss, being a diehard Kiss fan, one of the most heartbreaking experiences for me was seeing that Kiss farewell tour, because Peter couldn't play his parts. He was playing everything at, you know, half the speed as the original material, or what we'd grown up listening to on Alive and Alive 2. I think part of it is that so many people have this utopian image of how great Zeppelin was, how great they were possibly live. I would imagine that a good portion of the people have never heard bootlegs or, you know, that Live Aid, and actually the 40th anniversary show for Atlantic, have never been released with Zeppelin footage on it, because they refused to allow them to release the material because they felt they played so poorly on those occasions. So I almost have a feeling that they did the show, they thought it was maybe as good as it could get, right, and they sort of didn't want to tarnish, you know, the image that they did have.
Well, see, I agree with you, sort of. I think, to me, that when you say they, I think it's specifically Robert Plant.
Absolutely.
I honestly believe that Jimmy Page and possibly John Paul Jones and definitely Jason Bonham wanted this tour to happen. And I believe there were talks and they tried to pull him in. But Plant, like he always has, flaked on it, you know, and it's like maybe Plant knows something more than we do, and it's like you're saying that it, you know, the leave the memory at what it was, and the concert, the 2007 concert, was pretty good, although we know that the guitars were tuned down much lower and
right,
he didn't hit a lot of the high notes, but, you know, quite frankly, even back in the day, he didn't hit a lot of the high notes, you know,
right,
and
absolutely.
And Song Remains the Same, which was the live album from the 70s. If you guys don't know this, it's basically fact at this point that Robert re-recorded almost all of his, if not all of his vocals for that in the studio.
And for the new album, I've seen soundboard footage. I mean,
right,
I'd have to actually sit there and compare the soundboard footage to
what you saw.
You know, what I saw. But it seemed to me that, especially after the third or fourth song, it seems like his voice just received this boost out of nowhere. And it was like, all right, well,
really?
you know, the kid in me is saying, this kicks ass. This is taking me to, you know, my preteen years when I first, you know, found out about Zeppelin and I had that enthusiasm. So there's part of me saying that, and then there's part of me saying, you know, it sounds as if he absolutely touched things up. And wow, listen,
okay, this is major news. This is the first I'm hearing. So according to Victor from Mars Attacks, you are suggesting that the new Zeppelin DVD that's about to come out definitely has touch-ups, if not some major re-recording of vocals and maybe other things.
I honestly think that it does. There's also another musical passage that I remember hearing where definitely John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page were off. And right. From what I saw from the DVD, there's no spot at all where they're even remotely off and they're playing. I mean, I personally don't knock them for that because everybody does this. There are very few bands that can go out and put out a live concert, and their fans are going to buy it regardless. I mean, fans are going to buy this regardless, right. But since it's a one-off, and to make it even more special, it makes sense for them to touch it up and make sure that it's the best album possible. I mean, if it sounds like a third-rate bootleg, no one's going to buy it. I mean, let's
right.
be honest.
Right, no, totally. Totally. Yeah, well, I guess we're talking about two different things here, the DVD and the lack of any Led Zeppelin reunion. I do feel that Robert Plant is absolutely the one who has prevented it from happening.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he's just smarter than all of us. Maybe he thinks that, you know, maybe he recognizes that, okay, you do an actual tour, all that footage is going to be all over YouTube, and it's going to, you know, diminish what Led Zeppelin was.
Right.
But the flip side of that is he's prevented tours from happening for the last, you know, what, almost 25, 30 years at this point, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like Robert Plant is grouchy and ouchy about anything Led Zeppelin. I mean, he reminds me of a guy named Harrison Ford who played Han Solo in Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars guy. And anytime anyone asks Harrison Ford about Star Wars, he gets pissy and he hates it. And it's like, okay, dude, this is your iconic part that we all love and love you for. And he refuses to show it any props, you know? And
right.
It's like, maybe Plant isn't that bad because I do believe, you know, hey, he does go out on his solo tours and whatnot and play a lot of the Zeppelin classics, and he did do the Page Plant thing. But it's just like there's something there that he refuses to embrace. And I don't know. I mean, I know that, you know, these guys probably have more money than they could ever need, but come on, who doesn't need another, you know, let's say they got $100 million to do a small tour of the U.S. I'm sure they wouldn't split that equally with Jason. I'm sure that would be at least $20 million in Robert's pocket. I mean, who can't
right.
use $20 million? You know, it's
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely does seem strange. I don't know. And even doing a tour, why not do, you know, what Sabbath just did? Just play, you know, they did one show at the Download in England, and they did one show at, I believe it was at Lollapalooza in Chicago.
Right.
So you do
one. And they
one.
Would be doing a full tour Sabbath right now, if, you know, a full tour with, I guess, Tommy on drums, not Bill Ward. But they would be doing a full official Sabbath tour right now if Iommi hadn't gotten sick. So, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah. So let's get to the DVD, more of your review of the DVD. You hinted at maybe the fact that this DVD could possibly and probably has some touch-ups. That aside, where did you see it, A, and how was the experience of watching it? Were you just gripped by what you were seeing and hearing, or was there boredom or anything like that set in? What's your official review?
I think the actual DVD was excellent. I got to see it in a movie theater. It was completely digital, so it's the same quality as you're going to see on a Blu-ray, for example. And just that experience of seeing that show with that sound and with the digital image and just how vibrant the colors are and how well it was shot, it made me wonder why more bands don't do this. You know, people are wondering why fans are moving away from the music industry and wanting to download things. Well, do special events like this. I know Maiden has done this. I know for the Big Four shows they did this as well.
Right.
But I think more bands could do this as a promotional tool. At the same time, the theater that I was in only had roughly 30 people in it. I don't think that's any fault of the band. I think that has more to do with the theater actually not, you know, publicizing the event. I found out sort of by accident on a forum that someone mentioned that there was going to be a screening. You know, from top to bottom, though, everyone that was there was, you know, bobbing their heads, was jamming along to the songs and everything. The song selection was great. I mean, there were a few songs that they played that weren't, you know, some of my favorite tracks, and I wish they would have played something off of each album. They didn't. They didn't play absolutely anything off of In Through the Outdoor, and obviously they didn't play anything off of Coda. But it would have been cool, you know, to see them maybe do something off of each. But I understand, you know, the band has so many hits, it's difficult to choose an exact set list that you're going to make absolutely everyone happy. So, you know, I think they did a great job with what songs they did play. They did steer away from like some of their popular things, you know, which I thought was cool. They played some songs that maybe only a diehard would appreciate. There's one song off of Presence that they played, which was absolutely cool. That
what song was that?
They threw in there, and I should have looked this up beforehand.
Oh, no, yeah, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No.
Not Achilles' Last Stand.
No, I wish they would have played Achilles' Last Stand. They played A Day in the Life or something like that, it's called. Oh, it just came to me. It was For Your Life, which was really cool. It's like the third or fourth song in on the Celebration Day DVD. So it was cool to see them pull that out. It was also very cool to see the magic that is Led Zeppelin. You know, they do have an aura around them, seeing, you know, Jimmy Page up there being really a larger-than-life character, seeing John Paul Jones, which I've had countless arguments with people who have told me, you know, he's sort of the weakest link in the band, and just see...
That's such bullshit. I mean, there was no weak link in Zeppelin. That's, you know...
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. I mean, seeing him play, you know, a regular bass, a fretless bass, an eight-string bass, seeing him play, you know, various types of keyboards on stage, you know, it was just... It was like him giving a clinic, you know, just proving... Totally. How strong a musician that he is. And even though I mentioned that I think that some of the things were touched up, I would tell anyone that's remotely a Zeppelin fan that has never seen them live to check this DVD out. It is very cool. A lot of people have also mentioned, well, you know, John Bonham isn't there. You've already mentioned, you know, Jason Bonham is there. He's the next best thing. He's actually, as Robert Plant mentioned in one of the press conferences, he's been studying John Bonham's playing since he was born. He has countless bootlegs. He even admitted during the New York press conference that he's seen, you know, Song Remains the Same thousands of times, just sitting there and studying the parts. And apparently, he would actually sit down during the rehearsals and say, okay, well, how do you want me to play this song? And the other members would turn to him and say, well, what do you mean? And he'd say, well, during, you know, this tour, my father played it this way. During the other tour, he played it like this. On the album, it's like this. And
Robert Plant specifically, I don't know if it was at the New York one or the London press conference, he talks about that. I think it may have been the London one. And the press conferences they gave, that's a whole nother story with them, you know, Robert Plant just calling the guy a schmuck who you know, suggested that why didn't they tour again? And, yeah. You know, anyways.
I mean, All right, I understand where he's coming from, but at the same time, give me a break. It's two press conferences. It isn't as if they're doing, you know, 16 hours of press conferences like any other band that's promoting an album. You know, big deal. They had to sit down for 40 minutes at a time to answer some obvious questions. And, you know, they sort of came off jackass-ish at times. And, you know, I don't know. They could have handled things better. Now, I understand that they're trying to play up to a persona or whatnot, but still, I don't think they should feel that they're above anyone else. And there were other, like, snide comments about people not being from, you know, official media or whatnot, you know. But that's that's another conversation that could last hours as to what's actually suiting them better, whether it's, you know, mainstream media, or whether it's actually people like us. So,
right, cool. Well, thank you for sharing the little mini review there on the DVD. I'm actually just about to start work here on the East Coast of the United States, so let's keep doing this. Let's do some more episodes.
Sure.
I apologize that it was so brief today, but let's do it again real soon, and we'll just pick some subjects. You know, I just like talking topics like, you know, Kiss and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that with you. So,
yeah.
I was thinking of ending today's show with a song off of Coda. So maybe we could just briefly talk about that. Coda was kind of an interesting record to me because it came out, you know, after the fact, at least 2 years after Bonham had died. And it had, you know, a lot of people thought, I've heard people incorrectly cite that, oh, Coda was, you know, where Led Zeppelin were going to be going. And that's not true whatsoever. The way I understand it, Coda was simply a bunch of leftovers.
Right. Yeah. Apparently there's maybe two tracks, which are Ozone Baby and Darlene, that could have been, you know, on that next Led Zeppelin album. And actually Wearing and Tearing, which Jimmy Page played with Plant at some point. Like at
but I thought those tracks, I mean, Darlene, I know for, which I want to play for you guys, again, a Led Zeppelin song off of the album Coda. I mean, that was a track that just didn't make In Through the Outdoor. I mean, that was recorded during those sessions. I don't think it was the future. I think that, you know, there were three songs, Ozone Baby, Wearing and Tearing, and Darlene, that were, again, just leftovers from the In Through the Outdoor session. So I think for anybody to say that okay, those were three albums, three songs that were going to be on the next Led Zeppelin record, you know, if there would have been an album of new material, I think is just kind of guesswork. I mean, don't you think?
Right. Well, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think they've ever really come out and stated that any of these songs would have been the future. My only sort of hesitation to giving a definitive answer for that is that when they did put out that complete recordings box set, they included another four tracks, which were sort of leftovers from other sessions. So had the album have been, you know, 100% leftovers, why not include all these tracks to begin with? I don't know, maybe it was something to do with the length of vinyl or whatnot, and with CD they could include them. But, you know, again, why not release those others sooner? Who knows? I guess that's all part of the magic and the mystery behind the band, and who knows if they'll ever answer that, you know?
Yeah, who knows, really. And Coda, of course, was released on the Led Zeppelin label, Swan Song,
right,
which was most famous for releasing, obviously, Led Zeppelin records, and also Bad Company, I believe. And they also, Swan Song continued to exist for a little while after Led Zeppelin had dissolved, obviously long enough to have the Coda record, again, which came out in 1982 on November 19th, actually my birthday in 1982. But also that first Robert Plant solo record, which was very Zeppelin-esque, in my opinion, that first Robert Plant solo record, and very good, in my opinion. That was also right. on the Swan Song imprint label, if you will. Do you know who besides Bad Company was on that label? Do you know?
I think there was Billy Squire had a project that was on really? Swan Song. Wow. Yeah. It was like
that Piper?
It may have been Piper. He was in so many bands before he was actually a solo artist. I mean, he had opened up for Kiss with like four different bands before he had even become a solo artist. It may be less than that, but it was multiple bands. And there was someone...
Dave Edmonds. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now. Dave okay. Edmonds was on a guy named Dave Edmonds was yep. on Swan Song.
Who had a hit Dave in Edmonds the early 80s, and it's possible that was released as part of Swan Song. And there was someone who I'd heard interviewed not too long ago who mentioned that that they had been signed to Swan Song right before the label went under, and their recording never came out. And I don't remember for the life of me who that was at the moment.
According to Wikipedia, the last album, I don't even know if it was released, but the last album on Swan Song was a band called Wildlife. Okay. And it's weird because Wildlife has no Wikipedia entry, but under the Swan Song Wikipedia page, it says the discography of all the albums that were released on Swan Song. The final entry is a 1983 release by a band called Wildlife. So I don't know who that was. Something to research, definitely.
Yeah. And for old vinyl heads, that Swan Song sticker in the middle of the albums has to be the coolest sticker that anyone had, just seeing the angel or whatever you want to call it just spinning around there in circles while you're listening to any of these great albums.
Right, definitely. All right, Victor, well, I gotta jump on to my bread and butter here, my real work. But it's great talking rock and talking metal with you, and I think it's cool. We're going to release this on both the Talking Metal and Mars Attacks feed, and
yep.
This is part one of at least two, maybe three, four. Maybe we'll keep doing this on a semi-regular basis. So that's that.
Cool.
And where's the best place the listeners can check you out online?
They should go to marsattacksradio.com.
Cool. And they can check me out at talkingmetal.com. And both Mars Attacks and Talking Metal are, of course, available on iTunes. Cool. This is Darlene by Led Zeppelin off the Coda record. Thanks, Victor. We'll be right back.
for you.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.